This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
We're so busy, right? Anybody busy? You know, we have little children and we have grandchildren, and they're so busy too. And we're trying to keep a pattern that's going to, you know, keep us working together. And we struggle to give value to children. And as children grow up, they'll struggle having value. And one of the most important things we learn the earliest in life is that we're valuable and we're lovable. And as we work with people, what we discover is so many times, you're talking with them and you're listening and they're telling all kinds of things. And then all of a sudden they'll say, why do you care about me? Do you care about me? Why would you care about me? You must want something from me. Where does that come from? See, that comes from a performance-oriented mindset and a performance-oriented practices that we are pretty good at. You know, you heard Rick talk about that this morning, right? What were the three things he said we have? Anybody there this morning? That was a long time ago. Okay. That'll be in the test at the end, all right? So what he's talking about is all the things that we focus on those things, and then we can ignore other things. And so we're going to be really careful that we don't. And so we have built in our communities, we have built in too many cases, we've built performance orientation that makes us think we're not valuable unless we can produce. And I remember a lady in our home, Lois and I were talking with her, and I said, "Well, do you ever feel good about yourself?" She said, I do when I'm perfect." Well, if I'm going to wait for that one, that's not going to happen, okay? Okay, but you see, that was the mindset, and she was really struggling, and her face was in a grimace. And so what we're talking about here is those fears that drive us, and those fears replace love. And love cannot survive in the same environment as the fear, okay? And so when we get to that place, what do we do? So, you know, what we want to do is speak love into the fears. When we find the fears, we want to speak love into those fears. If the person shares some fears with us or some desperation, like a situation that just happened very recently, and then I asked one of the people involved, so why did that man do that? Why do you think he did that? Well, he didn't know. Well, what he did was irrational and destructive and harmful. I said, do you think there's any possibility that he felt very afraid? And so when we feel afraid and we start building walls, right, we're going to keep people out because we don't want anybody in there because that fear is going to get to us. So we want to be really careful. So as we're trying to open our hearts to the love that's around us, we tend to build these walls in front of us. We tend to build walls made out of anything. You try to get to know the person, and you discover there's a stone wall there, and you're trying to get through this stone wall. And so you tear that one down, and right behind that one, they have a brick wall, right? And then you tear that one down, right behind that one, there's a cement block wall. What can we do? You know, that doesn't typically work, okay? They're better at building walls than I am at tearing them down. And so what we have to do is find a way to go around that wall and get to the person's heart. Okay, so they start tearing down the wall because they're better at tearing down their own wall than I am at attacking their wall. So if we can speak truth into love, truth and love into fear, we find the fear, find the desperation. There are whole empty benches up front here. To you folks in the back, if you want to sit down, there are plenty of spaces up front here. Just thought I'd say that. So many things we could talk about here. We're talking about families find a struggle to, many times, to bring enough love into a child's life that they can open up that heart and they can thrive and flourish. So hopefully we can do that, and hopefully we'll talk about some things that will make that at least somewhat possible today. Well, on your handout, you should see at the top something about love or fear. There's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment, and we already talked about some of us understanding desperation. Fear will keep you from sleeping. Fear will make it impossible to get out of bed. Fear will make all kinds of things impossible, and that's torment, okay? But he who fears has not been made perfect in love, because we love him. We love him because he first loved us. So God loved us first, and that gives us the right to love him. And of course, if we want to love someone, we have to find a way to open our heart to that person's life, open our heart to that person's desire to love us. And so many times we're building walls instead of opening our hearts. So we can open our hearts. What it means is we're going to have to be vulnerable. We're going to have to be willing to risk, because the only way to avoid all love is not to love at all. Okay, the only way to avoid all risk is to not love at all. And so even if you have a little puppy, ever have a puppy that got hit on the road or anything like that? So you can't really love a puppy without knowing that you could lose the puppy, right? Or almost anything you could lose. And so, but are we going to say, well, I guess I'll never own a puppy, because what if I lose the puppy? Then I'll be sorry for the rest of my life. I'll be sad for life. No, well, we do take those risks. We take those risks and we make ourselves vulnerable so that our hearts can open to the love people want to share with us. And so we want to be careful that we don't just like gushingly open our heart to everybody. But if we open our heart just a little tiny bit, and they open their heart just a little tiny bit, and we do some more, and they do some more, after a while we get closer, okay? And when we run into the place they're not going to open their heart anymore, well, then we have to be more cautious and see if this can go or if it can't. So 1 John 4:17-18 are very important. Also 2 Timothy 1:7, which if you have your Bibles, you can take a look. It says, God has not given us the spirit of what? Fear. So if you have a spirit of fear, does it come from God? No, it doesn't. So God has not given us the spirit of fear. Now we should put a little bit of a parenthesis in here and say there really are some fears that we should have. Okay, we should be afraid of poisonous snakes, should be afraid of mad bulls free in the pasture. You know, there's some things to fear. You know, fear a driver who's not careful. I remember driving a semi and I tried to take a nap while the other guy was driving, and all of a sudden I discovered that I should have stayed behind the wheel, because there was not going to be any sleep, okay? So I had some real fears, and they were genuine fears. The next time I got behind the wheel, I stayed behind the wheel and made sure. So when you get the genuine fears, take care of those things. But we're going to be careful that the intimidating and destructive fears are not going to control us, controlling fears. And so God has not given us a spirit of fear. But what has he given us? He's given us, and some of the Bibles will tell you, he's given us a spirit of, what are they? Three things. What are they? Power and love and a sound mind, clear thinking. And if you know something about Sattler College, that's their motto, okay? So, and I think it's a great motto. So God has not given us a spirit of fear. We're dealing with fear that is not from God. The kind of fear, you know, that's debilitating is not from God. And so, but he has given us power, he's given us love, and he's given us clear thinking, and that's what I'm going to call you to today. So this passage is about our relationship with God. He loves us. Some of this is just like so, you know, elementary, simple. That love casts out any fear that we have. Fear and love cannot coexist. God's perfect love removes fear. God knows that fear causes torment. He does not want us to be tormented. He does not want us to fear him. Now, of course, we have to qualify that statement a little bit, because, of course, you know, we do fear God. He's God, and so, you know, he is to be feared. But the way I want you to understand the fear of God is to understand that we fear to offend him. We fear to hurt him. We fear to break his heart. Okay, can we understand that way of fearing? Okay, so if you have a spouse or, you know, somebody you love very dearly, are you afraid of that person? Well, hopefully not, but you should fear to harm them. You should fear to break their heart. And so to do anything that would be against what would be best for them should cause that level of fear with us. God wants us to trust him. He wants us to be made perfect, complete in his love. Christ committed himself to us. He draws us to himself by his love for us. He allows us to make the choice to follow him. He does not force us to decide. for him, we make that choice. So the passage also applies, these passages we're talking about also apply to our relationships with people. So relationships should be based on love. If relationships are based on love, they will be healthy. And here's where we get into more complicated parts of it. And healthy relationships should not cause fear. And those relationships in our intimate circles should not be based on performance. Now, my wife is pretty amazing. If you know Lois, she has the dishes washed before I'm done eating my cake, you know, and she has the wash machine going at 5 o'clock in the morning. And at 9 o'clock, you know, the beds are remade, and that used to take my mother till Thursday, you know, and now it's 9 o'clock, and by 10 o'clock, she's got the clothes folded and back in. Nothing bad about my mother, but she had a different way of living, okay. And my wife has a different way of living. So all these things to say, these things are very important to her. But she doesn't want me to love her because she's good at washing clothes, right? She doesn't really want me to love her because she's got the dishes washed and everything stacked in place and all the laundry's folded in the drawer. And it's 10 o'clock, right? You know, some of you ladies are probably upset right now. So, but, you know, this works for me. It's okay. You know, you're not under any kind of scrutiny, okay? But this works for me because I really love that kind of housekeeping that works for me. But when I tell her how much I appreciate that, what do you think she says? She says, I don't want you to love me for the stuff I do. I want you to appreciate me for who I am, okay? So that's pretty important, isn't it? So if it's all based on performance, then almost anybody could do that. And so we want to be careful that we love the people that God's brought us into our lives for us to love. And those relationships, if they're based on love, they'll be healthy because we'll be trying to do the best we can for that other person. They will not be judgmental. They will not cause fear. Our relationships should not cause fear with each other. Our relationships should not be judgmental. Well, I'll love you if you do this. Okay? But that love makes us perfect, makes us complete, because we love each other. We become whole people because we're loved unconditionally. It's so important that we, as human beings, are loved unconditionally, unqualified love that God has given somebody else to share with us. Now, we have to make a qualification here too, because we do want to trust love, and I talk to people about trusting love. Can you trust love? So many times they can't. Well, we have to trust two kinds of love here. We have to trust the perfect love of God. Will God ever fail you? No. Will you feel that way sometimes? I feel that way sometimes. But if he knows best, then he must have this together. Okay? So we trust the perfect love of God. Then we also trust the imperfect love of each other. So can you trust my imperfect love of you? And then if I fail you, can you forgive me? And we talk about it, and we can go back to love again so that the fear stays away. Okay? Or the fear is going to start controlling our relationship. And it's that fear that drives people to desperation. It's that fear that causes people to do things they really should not do. It's that fear that causes people to behave in ways that are really inappropriate and sometimes harmful and damaging. So we want to be careful. Our relationships with each other need to be based on love. They need to be healthy. That is to say, they're working toward the best in the other person. They will not cause fear. They will not be judgmental. And that love makes us complete. We become whole people because we are loved unconditionally. And I know many of you here are married. Marriage, we want to bring as much, this is not going to be about marriage, but we want to bring as much healing as possible into our marriages so that we're as healthy as possible when we get there. But the purpose of marriage is to provide an unconditional love between two people. We made a covenant, right? You stood up here in front of the church and you promised, and the bishop said, you are. And now there's a covenant, and in this covenant, you have decided and promised to love that other person with no condition. And that's what allows love to thrive in you. That's what allows love to thrive in the other person. when you love them that much. And you don't have to be married to know that. You can have a friendship like Jonathan and David, where that kind of love thrived. Number three, controlling, manipulating relationships, on the other hand, are not based on love. They are based on fear. So we have people whose lives are based on fear, and their lives based on fear turns them into controllers and manipulators. Okay? And some of those people are really good at it. They're so good at it that you can't tell. They are acting like they love you when the truth is they really don't. Okay? And sometimes they don't even know that they don't. They've developed into this pattern, and that pattern is a way that they build a wall around themselves, and so they've got a controlling and a manipulating approach to a relationship. And like I told the class this morning, sometimes you get these situations where people just have never quite grown up. They've never become adults. And as we work with people, it requires adults to make life work. And in Richie Lauer's, was anybody in Richie Lauer's session yesterday? A couple hands here, okay. He used the word adult one time. And how amazing was that? The word adult, yeah. Well, adults have a good way of relating. They know how to relate in healthy ways. When we're not adults, then we don't relate in healthy ways. And so people who never have learned to relate in healthy ways, their relationships are not based on love, but they're based on control and manipulation. And so what they have to do, because they're so fearful of themselves, is that they have to put you in fear also as a way of controlling you. Okay? And so this is, and many times they don't even know they're doing it. So what do? We speak love into fear. If we can find the fears, and we try to speak love into those fears. So if you do not comply with the controller, that person will find a way to make you pay. They're very good at finding ways to make you pay. I know it's not you doing this. Okay, I'm just talking about people you might know who might do this. Okay, just let me be clear on that. So they will use force. They will use fear to force you to do what they want you to do. Fear works because of the torment of possible judgment. You know, if they're constantly working on you at the level of fear, because fear has torment, there's a lot of pressure. And there's a lot of force to make you comply and do things you really don't want to do. And yet, they are usually very shrewd and sly and powerful and will make you fear. And so, as a result of fear, you'll comply. All right? So, manipulators are people who've never grown up. They're still immature. They're not perfect or complete. Perfect does not mean everything is exactly right. The Bible concept of perfect is that we are now complete. We've come to the place where we're grown up. Okay, a baby that's born, you know, is perfect. Okay, they're not going to go out and play ball today, but you know, they probably have five fingers on each hand and five toes on each foot, and they're perfect. And so, at whatever level of development, you know, we can be perfect. But people who are manipulators have never grown up. They're people living in fear. They'll have you living in fear. And unfortunately, sometimes those people are on the church board. Sometimes those people are the pastors. Sometimes they're the deacons. Sometimes they're the deacons' wives, okay? And these people are slowly manipulating everything that happens. I'm involved with some situations right now, and I'm saying, wait a minute. I thought we were going this way. All of a sudden, we seem to be going that way. Somebody behind the scenes is tweaking something. I don't know what it is yet. But somebody's doing something. And unfortunately, uncovering those things is usually not a lot of fun. So they will control you if you allow it. Typically, those people grew up in unhealthy conditions, and so they had to develop defenses, and they had to develop fears to protect themselves. So they've got all these walls there, and so we try to speak love into those truths, love and truth into those fears. And most of the time, they get really, really defensive. But don't give up, okay? Is love more powerful than fear, do you think? Is love more powerful? Is love stronger than anger? Is love stronger than fear? Is love stronger than bitterness? Is love stronger than all those sins? It is. So that's what we count on. So some children are really smart. I was one of those troublemakers. You know, my mom told me I caused her more trouble than my brothers put together. So, you know, you heard it straight from the lady who should have known me the best. And, you know, I found ways to manipulate my parents, to make them think what I wanted them to think. And that really, that's not a good thing, okay? That's really not a good thing. And so it probably made me hypersensitive to students trying to manipulate me. And I'm sure some of them were successful. I had some pretty good students who probably completely bamboozled me all the way through school. They become masters of control, but there's really no love in their actions. Sadly, these people do not know love. They cannot experience love. Their life is about control, and that level of control is going to destroy love. Okay? Unfortunately, when you find people who are controllers, you find people who don't know love, don't seem to have love, you're talking about a very sad life. A life that's so, so sad, because this person just can never experience love. They can never open their heart enough to experience love. And where we really get into this is like in marriages, where you get a husband who will not open his heart to his wife, a wife who will not open her heart to her husband, and the other person is just longing to speak love and kindness into that heart. And that heart is just so fearful, just so afraid. You know, how can we get close to that heart? They can't know love. They don't experience love. They can't feel love. And so they can't offer love. They cannot offer love. They can only offer control by fear and by torment, because that's the only way they know how to live, but that is not God's way. And I have seen people, though, respond in such dramatic fashion when real love was offered to them, and they started dropping their defenses a little bit, just little by little, and you keep speaking care into that heart. Keep speaking love into those fears. Keep speaking truth into the heart that is so afraid. And eventually, the walls start dropping, and they start dropping. And after a while, usually they get petrified and scared, just completely petrified. They're like, oh. And you say, no, it's okay. It's okay. We're looking for the real you that God put in there. Underneath all that pain, I talked about this in the morning class. You know, there's different kinds of counseling. One kind is that I'm so smart that I can take somebody who's troubled and I can shape them into whatever. That kind of counseling is going on. That is really dangerous and wicked. Okay? The kind of counseling that God wants us to do is to look at that life and see underneath all that pain, underneath all that rejection, underneath all of that hurt, underneath all that harm, there's a real person that God loves. And can we get some of this stuff out of the way so we can find the real person that God has there? Okay? Because there's a real person there. And many times that person is so afraid of who they are that they'll start a sentence and they'll stop. They won't finish a sentence. And you'll say, no, it's okay. It's okay. What were you going to say? And sometimes they just won't. And you got to come back next time. Okay? And next time. And eventually that heart starts opening a little tiny bit. And you say, it's okay, that's you. That's the real you. But they've been pretending for so long. And there's so much fear that they can't allow that love to start adjusting what's happening in there. But they can. They will. Okay? But it takes enormous amounts of energy, and usually more than I have. Okay? And maybe more than you have. But we can hopefully eventually do that. So many people who are being controlled don't realize they're being controlled. Control has become so normal that control seems normal and feels normal, but it's not. And so you get some counselors or leaders or teachers or whatever their task may be who are controllers. And you get a person coming out of a controlling home or a controlling marriage or a controlling relationship, and they'll get attracted to a controlling counselor. That makes sense? Because it feels like home. They come to you and you're trying to be gentle and kind. Oh, this is scary. I don't know this language, right? And so they say, stay away. But they get to a controller, and it's a marriage made in heaven, right? Bad choice of words. So anyway, it's not normal. It's wrong. It's sin. But control can feel good. And something else that I mentioned this morning is that if you're a person whose life is out of control and you go to a counselor, even if the counselor is not a good counselor, you can start seeing some improvement. Because if you have no self-discipline, no control in terms of your own ability to love and be a mature person, and you get into a counseling system that's got a lot of control, it starts bringing direction to your life, even though the direction is not good direction. Okay? Everybody follow that a little bit? Okay. Trying not to make this overly complicated. But it's easy for us to fall into patterns like that. Godly people. Well, let's see. I wasn't quite finished with that list of things there. Control can feel good. It can feel safe. It can provide protection. Unfortunately, all of that is false. Godly people will not manipulate you. If you're being manipulated, the manipulator is not a godly person. I don't care who they are. You're going to have to make the choice that this person is not healthy for you. This person is someone who's going to harm you. And be careful. It doesn't mean they're going to do something terrible, but it means that they're going to keep you locked in a form. They're going to keep you locked in a pattern from which you're not going to be able to escape. And so we want to be careful that that is not what happens. Unfortunately, that's false, and these people will manipulate you. Godly people will not manipulate you, okay? They will teach you. They will show you. They will give you space. They will direct you, and they will speak love into your fears. But you will have to make the choices. Involved with a situation very recently where a decision had to be made, okay? But I said, I cannot make it for you. Here's what I think. You have to make the choice. You have to take the action. Sure, we can come in and make things go the way we think they should go. That's a very short-term fix. That's not a long-term healing. So in a real loving relationship, you are cared for and you are safe. You're protected and you do not need to fear. You might still fear sometimes, but you do not need to be fearful in that loving kind of relationship. In those healthy kinds of relationship, you can respond in love. You can respond in real love. You do not fear, but you grow into maturity. You become a real person who lives and loves and lives in love. You grow to be the person, more the person God wants you to be, and you mature in your Christian life, and you become a person who can reach out in love to those hurting persons around you. So we learn how to... we learn how to receive love, and then we learn how to give love. So we're struggling, many people today, especially young people, struggling, and not only young people, but struggling to receive love. We talked about that earlier. You know, can you feel worthy of receiving love? Can you really believe that God could provide somebody who would love you for who you are? Not for what you're doing and for what performance you can do or because you're good at baking cakes or, you know, driving trucks or whatever you do, but somebody who would just love you because God provided them to love you. And can you believe that there's somebody like that? Can you believe that God's good enough to do that, to provide that person for you? And then are you willing to open your heart to that person? Are you willing to open your heart to that person so that love can start flowing into your life? And then as we become healthier that way, then the love can start flowing out of our life into the other person. I forget which one of the authors it is who writes books on some of these subjects and shows a picture of the heart of God and filled with love, and there's a pipe. Anybody know what I'm talking about? There's a pipe down to your heart, and that pipe keeps your heart filled, and then you have other people's hearts over here, and God's love keeps your heart so full that love overflows into this heart and that heart, and then those people get healthier, and then it can flow from their hearts to other people's hearts. Do you think God's love will ever get all gone? Think that will run out? Maybe not. Okay, maybe not. Will your love tank ever get empty then? If you're hooked up to God's love tank, no, it won't. But you know, there could be some trials in there that make life a little difficult. but God is there to provide a love for you. So we revel in the perfect love of God. When you go to bed at night, you put your head on the pillow, you should thank God he loves you. Thank God that he has the privilege of you loving him. Okay? And just thank God for the love he gives to you, and that he gave you another day to love and to live and to live in love. So we revel in that perfect love of God. We rejoice in the imperfect love of each other. All the love you receive from me or any other human being you know will someday fail you. Someday it will fail you. Someday you'll think, I was supposed to do something and it won't happen. And I should have said thank you and I didn't. I should have said please and I didn't. I should have given you a kiss and I didn't. What, you know, you make up the whole list. And okay, whatever that is. We offer our imperfect love to each other as the love of God that flows through us. All love belongs to God. I don't really have any. It all comes from God. Any love you have to share with anybody, it's God's love. And that's where it comes from. So, love protects others. Love removes fear. Love produces joy. Love rejects wrong. Love cares for truth. Love creates holy boldness. Love creates maturity. Love brings healing. Love with truth brings healing. Those are the two things together. So we have to decide each day how we want to live. Do you want to live in love or do you want to live in fear? And fear becomes such a powerful default that we go there so quickly. Okay, lots of things to be afraid of. But God is calling us to love. He's calling us to love and not to fear. I just saw the 10-minute sign back there. That means it's my turn to stop talking and your turn to start. So what questions or comments, what would you like to say or share? And don't be bashful. There's nobody here but us. Maybe you have a testimony that the rest of us should hear. Is a controlling person always motivated by a lack of love? I think they're motivated by fear and some pain behind that. Okay. Would a controlling person be a person who has love? Is that the question? Or I think a controlling person does not understand love. They're probably trying to understand love, and the only way to retain their own safety is to somehow control you. So they're not going to trust your love. Okay. We want to be careful here because we're all controllers. Okay. We all find ways to control life. Okay. I control life as a teacher. You're all sitting there listening to me. Okay. So we want to be very careful in that level of control. Okay. You drive a semi. That's you know, you ask people, what's your job? You know, you talk to people and you're interviewing them and you ask the questions about what they do. And please, if you drive a truck or a steamroller or whatever you drive, this isn't proof that there's something wrong with you. You know, you talk to somebody who's a total controller and then you discover that they drive a big machine that can push buildings down in one push, you know, and then it makes a little sense here, you know. That could happen, you know. It doesn't work to reason logically the other direction, though. Okay. Okay, while you're thinking, I can talk a little more. Sometimes people control because it's the only thing they have to control. Okay. So I was talking to a person recently who was complaining about a controller. And so I said, well, let's think about that person. What is their status in life? What do they have control over? And they said, well, not very much. Okay. Well, then probably any little area they can control, they're going to control. Any little tiny place in life they can control, they will control. And so sometimes we have to give them more options so they're not pressured, so their fear does not drive them to the desperation of manipulation. I think this is the 5-minute sign, so you have 5 minutes to bless the rest of the group with your wisdom. Mm-hmm. How do you help a controller? Is that the general question here? Yeah. Well, the thing you don't want to do is get them in a discussion with three other people and you, because they will make sure that you're only, if you confront them, they will put this together that there are four against you. Okay. So that's the first thing not to do. What you want to do is get them alone. Alone. Okay. And then start talking gently and ask them questions about themselves. So, hey, Joe, I don't know much about you. Tell me about you. How? There's nobody else there to impress. Only you. Okay. Now we're going to see if they can talk English or if they're going to try to impress you. Okay. And then when they're talking, don't say, "Well, that can't be true." Say, that's interesting. I wonder how did you come to that conclusion? Yeah. So many times I get into these discussions with children. Because, you know, when you work with school, you're working with people's children, you know. Other people know children by their parents, and I tend to know parents by their children, which is very curious. Okay. And so what you do is, well, me and Dad ain't getting along, right? This is prominent. Okay. Well, what could we do? Well, could you talk to Dad sometime? Well, what should I say? Well, you know, are you ever driving in the car alone with him? Yeah. Say, hey, Dad, what was it like growing up in Grandma and Grandpa's house? Did you ever ask him that? No. Well, maybe that would be a good thing. What was third grade like? You know, just get the little thin edge of the wedge in there and start tapping it gently, okay, to find out what's... Sometimes it works good and sometimes it works better. If I heard the question, it's how do you lovingly respond to someone who has controlling tendencies, but they're not, and you're not sure how to approach that? Is that? Okay, I'm down to 1 minute here, so I'm in big trouble here, and I got another question on the board. So, if this is a person you care deeply about, give them time, give them love, give them care, listen to them. And see if you can't gently get inside of their heart. By what? I don't know. Do they like gifts? Do they like notes? Do they like phone calls? Do they like chocolate? Find something they like and feed them chocolate. Okay. There are husbands and wives who live their whole lives and die that way. You know, they've done the whole thing of manipulating each other. All their lives. It's just so sad. But usually I am out of time, so when Matthias gets up here, I have to stop talking. So it's so sad. And usually after one of them dies, the other one just lauds that person, that this was the greatest person. You know, you almost wish you could die so they could say nice things about you. But, yeah, okay.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.